Welcome to the Amazon Web Services Podcast, hosted by Simon Alicia and Simone Brunozzi. This is your regular insight into the world of AWS with service updates, architecture discussions, and technical tips. You can contact us on our website, aws.amazon.com/podcast, by email at awspodcast@amazon.com, and on Twitter at @AWSPodcast.
Welcome to episode number 39 of the AWS podcast. This is Simone Brunozzi, Senior Technology Evangelist based in San Francisco, California. And today with me, we have a guest, Jim Scharf, Director of Identity and Access Management, or IAM, at Amazon Web Services. Hello, Jim. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Very well, thanks. We are here at the AWS Summit in San Francisco. So this is April 30th, 2013. You are probably listening to this a few days later. And today we will talk about security and in specific about IAM, or Identity and Access Management. So first of all, Jim, how can we quickly introduce IAM and why this is important for customers?
Yeah, so AWS Identity Access Management, or IAM, gives you the control to define who can access what in your cloud environment. So you can define users who work for your corporation or you're partnering with. You can specify which permissions you want them to have to access which cloud resources. That could be data stored in S3, database data in DynamoDB, that kind of thing.
So, for example, I could have user Simone with EC2 admin rights, which means I could do anything on Amazon EC2, but I don't have permissions to do other operations with other services. Is that correct?
Correct. And even I could grant you rights to only launch EC2 instances but not shut them down and only leave it for, say, an IT admin to shut them down if I so chose.
Okay, very nice. And why do you think this is important for customers? I think it's obvious, but maybe you have a good, interesting point of view on this.
Yeah, well, I mean, AWS makes it easy for an individual developer to get started and get up and going without worrying about access control. But as you start building something more sophisticated, invariably you have multiple people who want to operate in your cloud environment. And that's where IAM comes in.
Okay, so let's try to play devil's advocate for a second. Imagine that I am stubborn and I have this startup, I'm growing, but I still don't want to use IAM because maybe I think it's a waste of time or maybe I think I don't need it. What would be the risk? So can you just give us a couple of examples where something can go very wrong unless I use IAM to put things properly?
Sure.
Some examples?
Sure. Well, if you use a traditional, older technology analogy, it'd be as if you had one server that all your company used, and you operated, everyone used that same server as root, whether it be a Unix or Windows file system. Everyone sharing the same root or admin account, the potential downside there is as you add more employees to your corporation, someone who shouldn't be able to, say, shut down your web server or whatever could do that, and that could obviously have bad impact for your organization.
Of course. So I know we have a few things that we want to discuss today, and I will let you talk about the MFA functionality for IAM. I think it's one of my favorite, actually. So I will let you describe that, and I will add some more comments that from my own experience.
Sure. So MFA stands for multi-factor authentication. And basically what this is doing is augmenting your username and password to log into your AWS account, either as the root or as the individual users that we've created, with a one-time password that can be generated either with a traditional hardware token, similar to what you may have from your bank or your corporation, or what we call virtual MFA, which is a smartphone application that runs on any of your common smartphones.
Nice. For example, in my case, I use Google Authenticator as an MFA, as a virtual MFA device. And it's actually great because whenever I log in into AWS, first, I never do it with my master account. I always do it with my secondary account. I don't know if there is a better way to...
We usually just call them the user account. We call the master as the root account and the secondary accounts as the users.
Yeah, the user. So I log in as a different user, and I enter my password, And then I also enter my, you know, six-digit code from my virtual MFA on my phone. So it just adds extra security. So whenever I log in, I'm sure that nobody else, you know, is messing up with my stuff.
Right, which is important given that you're out in front of customers and giving presentations. If any time your password slipped up, it, you know, at least you have your MFA right there.
Yes, actually, I remember that Jeff Barr, our chief technology evangelist, when we used to demonstrate MFA, he would, you know, be on stage presenting on a projector, so showing up his monitor, and then he would, on purpose, start typing the password in the wrong field. So he would just type the password in the username field, and people would say, "Hey, wait a minute, we can read your password." And then he would say, "Well, even with that, you don't have my MFA device, my multi-factor authentication, therefore you cannot log in with my credentials, even if you know the password." So it's a good point. So do you think that users are adopting, are using MFA a lot? Do you see a growing adoption of this feature?
Yeah, definitely. And particularly the ones that are thinking more about their security of what they're putting on AWS. And you know, one of the things I've heard from customers that they like about it is this is traditional enterprise class security. But you know, particularly if you're using the smartphone-based MFA, it's completely free along with using your AWS account. Or you can get the hardware devices from a partner of ours that provides them for a low price.
Nice. Is there any difference in terms of security between a virtual MFA or a hardware MFA from your point of view?
Well, there's a lot of debate in the industry about this. Obviously, the dedicated tokens have been around for a number of years. A number of vendors make them, and they're dedicated devices, and they're tamper evident. You know, their chips are epoxied down, and all that kind of thing. Whereas a smartphone devices, you're relying on the security of the device. So, you know, as the OS is for the smartphones keep getting upgraded, those are getting better and better. But you know, most security purists would say that the dedicated hardware device is the ultimate in the security.
Yes. So essentially, let's say that if I'm using it and I enable MFA, in most cases, even a virtual MFA should be enough in terms of security. Maybe there are some specific cases where, like, very sensitive companies, sensitive about security, where maybe I will need to use the hardware device.
Exactly, because it's additive to your username and password. So as long as you're picking smart passwords, which the IAM console helps you do for your users, you can set that up automatically, set password strength. The smartphone base is usually good enough, whereas a lot of companies will actually get the hardware devices on the root or for their administrator accounts that have very wide privileges.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So let's switch to something else now. I know that there are a couple of things we definitely want to cover, and one is roles for Amazon EC2. Yep. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, so if you have an application running on EC2 virtual servers, that accesses other AWS services such as S3 or DynamoDB, basically it needs to make API calls to their services. So prior to roles for EC2, you as a customer needed to get security credentials for let's create an IAM user for your website, maybe call it website user. You give it certain permissions, say to read and write to S3 or DynamoDB. But now you had to get the credentials securely out to the EC2 instance. And then as you auto-scale or add more instances, that can be a bit of muck that you might not want to deal with. Well, with roles for EC2, you go into the IAM console and you define a role, which is effectively a set of permissions. And again, you can create it a role called website role, and you can give it the permissions that you need, say read and write to S3. And then as you launch the EC2 instance, you specify that role. And then this also works with auto-scaling and some of the other services that work with EC2. And then IAM is responsible for getting temporary security credentials out to your EC2 instances that have the permissions there. And then if your application uses the AWS SDK, that takes care of using these temporary credentials, and so your application is none the wiser. So your application no longer needs to embed AWS credentials into config files or your application. And one of the benefits is that these credentials are actually rotated multiple times per day. And so what I've heard from customers is they really like it because it's one of these great features that both improve security and is easier to use.
Yeah, this is actually a very good point, and I would like to elaborate a little bit more. We're talking about STS, right, the security token service here.
Yes.
So this is something that people really need to know, especially when they build, for example, mobile applications.
Right.
So let me just set the stage and make sure that we are all on the same page. So when you create, for example, a mobile app, and you want to use Amazon Web Services within that app. For example, if you want to have this photo app that uploads to Amazon S3, you will need to eventually have an API call to Amazon S3 with credentials.
Right.
And if you do it in a very straightforward way, we'll just put your own credentials there. But, of course, this is very unsecure somehow because even if the app would be downloaded to smartphones in a binary mode, in a binary format, there are many ways to try to reverse engineer that code and eventually find out your credentials.
Right.
Instead, IAM provides a service called STS, Security Token Service, if I'm correct,
yep,
which lets you create temporary credentials in a way that is called like a token vending machine.
Correct.
And you can use those credentials into your application. So even if one set of credential gets compromised for any reason, the amount of damage is very limited, and it only lasts as long as the temporary credential is in place. You can always revoke that credential. And in any case, usually it expires in 24 hours, if I'm correct. Is that the default?
Yeah, that's the default.
Yeah. So after 24 hours, that credential expires. And whenever the app needs to do another call, it will get a new set of credentials using this token vending machine approach.
Right.
And you don't need to really do much in your code to use this. It's just a few extra lines to be able to use this functionality. And it's very important to make sure that whatever happens to your app, your main security credentials are never compromised. So this is a key feature that is available for IAM and has been available for a while now.
Yeah.
And I think some customers are not aware of it, so it's a very good point to make. What about, can we talk about policy variables?
Yeah, so,
yes.
So just recently we launched policy variables. So customers have told us that it's our permissions control model is very powerful and flexible, but as they scale to add more users in their account, they didn't want to have to specify permissions, naming Simone or Jim or whatever in the actual permissions. So this is fairly simple and straightforward in that we allowed variables such as username to be substituted in at runtime. And while this may sound pretty benign as a standalone feature, combined with some of the identity federation capabilities we've had, now that makes it actually much more powerful. Because now as you have users coming in, federated users coming in with these temporary credentials, now you can substitute in the username that they're coming in with and use that in the policy. So, for example, if you wanted to create a bunch of subfolders in S3, one for Simone, one for Jim, prior to this release, you would have had to have permissions and actually hard code in, the string Simone and Jim. Now, after this release, in your permissions for S3, you could just say, effectively, dollar user. And then as we are coming in with our temporary credentials, that's automatically replaced.
That's a great feature, and I love it. I want to give our listeners one simple example of, for example, Amazon S3, let's say. Because I know that a lot of people are using S3 even for small projects or small things. Of course, there are people doing much more serious stuff with Amazon S3. But most of our listeners like to play with services and try to understand them better. So why don't we try to give them a simple example of a policy, just an IAM setup that we can use for Amazon S3 and something that might be relevant and useful for them.
Sure. So let me think for a second. So let's take an example where I want to give you permission to read, to basically get files from my S3.
Yeah.
So
from one particular bucket or your whole S3?
Well, let's start and just say overall, I want to give you the ability to get files from my overall S3.
Okay.
So what IAM lets me do is centrally I can say, well, for user Simone, I'll give you permissions get but not put. So now, in general, with setting nothing else, you'll be able to get everything but not put.
Nice.
Now, let's say, however, that's working because now you can see what I'm working on. But at a certain point, we need to collaborate. And now, let's say a particular bucket, let's say a development bucket, mm-hmm. I want you to be able to write files into that bucket. Now what I can do is, at the S3 level, go down and set permissions on that bucket so that you can write to that bucket. And that will allow you to write to that bucket. And then furthermore, what S3 takes it down to individual granularity, you can actually set what we call ACLs, or access control list, on a given file to specify further permissions on a given file.
So a file is also, we call it an object in S3, right? I know. Sometimes people
mix the terms.
Use the same terms.
But down to an individual object level. So you can basically specify down to that level. So S3 is a very advanced. They've really plumbed our access control model all the way down to the individual object level. So you can stay kind of coarse and high level and just say, hey, user A can get but not put, and user B can put but not get files or objects. Or you can take it down to, more granular, which is bucket level, or all the way down to the object, file level. So it really gives you a rich control, and you can kind of control at the level that you wish.
Nice. So just to give our listeners a bit of context, I told you that we are here at the AWS Summit. You don't hear much noise because we are almost at the end of it, and we are actually sipping some good wine while we are having this conversation. That's probably why we feel so happy and friendly. And there's something actually that makes me very happy, which is just yesterday, right?
Yes.
But in particular you and your team, you have launched a new blog focused on security. And this is something that I'm sure people will love. The URL is blogs.aws.amazon.com/security. And, of course, it will also be in the footnotes of this podcast. So if you – just let me say this again so you can remember it. blogs.aws.amazon.com/security. And the blog just started yesterday. There are just two posts right now. But I know that you will be regularly posting new stuff related to IAM in specific or in general about security. And I know that customers will love this blog because there's been so many requests of something like this for a long time. Can you tell us something very quickly about the blog?
Yeah, so this actually came out of, at Amazon we really focus on, talking to our customers and responding to their feedback. And when I was at the reInvent conference in Las Vegas last November, one of the common, I heard a couple common themes come up. One was AWS puts out so much, so many features, it's hard to keep up overall, and particularly...
Yeah, it's hard even for evangelists like me. It's so
exactly.
hard to keep up with everything.
And then particularly, if you want to listen in on a particular topic, it's hard to, sort it out from all the many iterations of features that are going out.
Yep.
Secondly, some people wanted a bit more prescriptive advice on topics of security. Hey, tell me what I should do with IAM. Right now as we're talking, there's an IAM, top 10 IAM best practices going on talk right now. People are saying, hey, can you put that content up where we can access it?
So are we going to put this content on the blog once it's recorded? And
yeah,
everything?
So nice. Things, tips and tricks like this kind of thing. We'll put up there also a place to direct to, say, the reInvent videos or the videos from the San Francisco Summit today.
That's great.
That are security-focused, direct to there. So now that people who are really interested in the topic of security can easily get at that content and really focus in. So we're really excited about it, and we have a whole bunch of content lined up and internally, and already we launched it today. And then even internally, the great thing about AWS is our inboxes are flooded of internal people who want to submit content for this blog, because all the teams are focused on security features, and they really want to get that out, the message out to the customers.
Nice. So to our listeners, if you promise not to share this email address with like everybody in the world, or you know, spam lists, Jim Scharf or James Scharf, his email is jscharf@amazon.com. He is the director for identity and access management, and I would like you to email him any specific question you have about security or IAM, possibly you know something that he could write about in the blog as well. And I really want you to tell your friends or you know yourself to go to this blog and take a look at it, because I'm pretty sure by the time this podcast is out, there will be a few other articles published. It will be you know in about a couple of weeks, I think. And I'm sure you will find it very interesting. I'm really looking forward for this. So, Jim, I think it's the end of this podcast for now. I want to thank you very much for your time. It was a really nice conversation. It's always good when you have you know someone like Jim, which is very knowledgeable about security, and I'm sure that he would say you know he could say a lot you know many more things about security, but maybe I will have him for another podcast in the future, maybe in a couple months.
I would love to.
Yeah, that would be nice. So let us know if there is anything you want to hear from Jim or from the security team. And remember, we are you know online on Twitter. We are at AWS Podcast. You can find it on aws.amazon.com/podcasts. And, of course, all the links and everything else are in the show notes. This is all for today, so thank you for listening, and talk to you the next time. Arrivederci. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the AWS Podcast. We love to get your feedback, so please contact us via our website, aws.amazon.com/podcast, via email at awspodcast@amazon.com. and on Twitter at AWS Podcast. Background music provided under Creative Commons Attribution 2.5 by Porchcat. Visit ccmixter.org/files/porchcat/3705.